Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. I'm Elias Steele. And tonight we are going to delve into a little American spiritualism, if you will, based on this book that I've had for quite a while. It's called American Scriptures, and it's by Carl Van Doren and Carl Karmer. Published by Bonnie and Gar, I believe it is Bonnie and Gar. And Carl Van Doren is a historian and academic from back then. It was published in 1946. I don't know if there's any. I never really looked to see if there was any of these books revised. I'm sure there may be in some version, but. But tonight, what I'm going to talk about is I have three different essays that I'm going to see if I might. They're rather short, not really essays. They're collections in some cases of letters. In one case, of course, the Bill of Rights. So I wanted to read that, and Freedom of the Press is just another essay. So and. We will talk about that. But the first one that I wanted to read was called the Alamo. And I thought it would be, this is a very interesting account. And it's several letters of the men who fought and died there as they were, and it talks a great deal about their patriotism, their courage, and even their craziness. I mean, I'm not sure, but it's the ultimate of patriotic courage that is created from some ideal of independence, an ideal of freedom, an ideal of liberalism, and. Liberalism is that the freedom to be whatever you want to be, the freedom to think how you want to think, to be accepted as you are, and to be believe in good of mankind, regardless of who that man is. And if there is not a redeeming quality in that individual, you forgive them and move on. Your life. And that is what a liberal is. And I can't, that's how I believe. And it's also based on the interpretation or the translation or the definition of liberal in the Webster's Dictionary. It means a person who believes in the good of mankind. And oddly enough, a conservative, that same reference, which is Webster's Unabridged Dictionary, it states that a conservative believes in the believes in the evil of man, and that's exactly what that means. It believes that men are evil, essentially, and have to be, whipped to death. Okay, whereas a liberal believes that man is good and should be allowed to be whatever he wants to be, while the other says, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. They always want to regulate your morality. So, I mean, that's a conservative. So, but there's a blend of conservatism and liberalism in the United States, and I believe that those are the people that I'll be talking to tonight. When I read these works, and hopefully I can get through all of them without running out of voice and time. The Alamo. No words can tell this tale. Our tongues are stilled. Wherever we behold a thick-walled mission standing near San Antonio's winding stream, only the heart can speak in silent homage. remembering the grove of cottonwoods, the crumbling, roofless church inside the walls, and valiant men, tall breakers of the cane, wild riders of the swelling western waters, and Kentucky hunters, sons of Tennessee, who gave their lives for freedom's sake in Texas. Within the conquered walls of the Alamo, millions of stars made bright the deep, dark sky. When Santana's army reached the river and halted there, then slow the gun sunrise came, and flooding the plain with level golden light, long shadows of the foe's great cannon fell across the land, black harbingers of death, while Colonel William Travis wrote a letter. Commandancy of the Alamo, Texas, February 24, 1836. To the people of Texas and all Americans in the world, fellow citizens and compatriots, I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santana. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender nor retreat. Then I call on you in the name of liberty, of patriotism, and everything dear to the American character to come to our aid with all dispatch. The enemy is receiving reinforcements daily and will no doubt increase to 3,000 or 4,000 in 4 or 5 days. If this call is neglected, I am determined to sustain myself as long as possible and die like a soldier who never forgets what is due to his own honor and that of his country. Victory or death. William Barrett Travis, Lieutenant Colonel Commandant. 6 days went by, and the host beside the stream grew larger, darkening the far-spread land. And in the Alamo, 150 men stood to their guns and waited out the hours, praying that somehow help would come to them. Then shadows flitted from the star-filled river, and 32 armed men from old Gonzales stood at the gate of the surrounding fort, asking to perish rather than to live, and know that others died and they not there. Days came, and on the wall crouched the defenders, among them a lank Jim Bowie, who had struck his hilted knife to many an evil heart, and David Crockett, nursed on panther's milk, or so he said, and who hung his powder horn upon the gleaming hook of a new moon. Crockett, the canebrake, coonskin congressman, the yellow blossom of the forest aisle, and writing away the last dear hours of life, telling their story in his homely words that proclaim the birth of mighty Texas. March 1st, the enemy's forces have been increasing in numbers daily. Notwithstanding, they have lost about 300 men in the several assaults they have made upon us. Colonel Bowie's illness still continues, but he manages to crawl from his bed every day, that his comrades may see him. His presence alone is a tower of strength. The enemy becomes more daring as his numbers increase. And men, March 2nd, this day, the delegates meet in general convention at the town of Washington to frame our Declaration of Independence, that the sacred instrument may never be trampled on by the children of those who have freely shed their blood to establish it in the sincere wish of Davy Crockett. March 4th, pop, 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 born, born, a boom, 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 throughout the day. No one for memorandums now. Go ahead, liberty and independence forever. The foe has raised the red flag of war, no quarter. His bugles sound the call of fire and blood. And the Americans watch the sun go down and know their eyes will see it rise but once again. And Bill Travis, struck with fever from his cot, called to his men at midnight, torches flare before the altar of the Mission Church, filling the aisles with intermittent light, striking grim faces with a sudden gleam, and a sick man lifts his tired head and speaks. We are overwhelmed and our fate is sealed. Within a few days, perhaps within a few hours, we must be in eternity. It is no longer a question of how we may save our lives, but how best to prepare our death and serve our country. If we surrender, we shall be shot without taking the life of a single one of our enemy. If we try to make our escape, we will be butchered before we can dispatch our adversaries. And to either of these courses, I am opposed, and I ask you to withstand the advance of the enemy. When they shall storm the fort and scale our walls at last, let us slay them as they come, as they leap over the ramparts. Slay we all of them, until our hearts are powerless to lift our swords in defense of ourselves, our comrades, our country. Yet to every man I give permission to surrender or attempt to escape. My desire and decision is to render or to attempt my desire and decision is to remain in the fort and fight as long as breath remains in my body. Do as you think best, each of you. Those who consent to remain with me to the end will give me joy unspeakably. The end comes swiftly when the morning breaks across the plain, and drums beat and bugles call, and all the enemy's 5,000 men begin the charge. They drop in lifeless windrows, but ever they come on, rest relentless waves, and they inevitably reach the shore. The battering rams beat like giant drums upon the stout old gate until they yield, and the foe floods in as freshets flow in spring, back into Kentucky and in Tennessee. And the Americans fight their way down to the church, and there before the altar pile the slain in one great human rampart, and there they stand, their ammunition gone, but still they slash and jab and strike until the last one falls. And sudden stillness settles over all. The enemy has won the Alamo, and all of its 182 have met swift death within its conquered walls. Only a woman and her baby live, of all Americans within the mission, wounded but holding close to the tiny child. Sue Dickerson related her tragic story. The struggle lasted more than 2 hours when my husband rushed into the church where I was with my child and exclaimed, "They are inside our walls. All is lost. If they spare you, save my child." Then, with a parting kiss, he drew his sword and plunged into the strife. When dust had drifted through the Alamo, the foemen brought in wood from out of the forest and made the towering pile in which they placed the bodies of our heroes. Then the stars came out and the flame licked upward toward them. And so these men of the woods and the winds and the streams went back into the elements they loved, and we who honor them can feel them there. They are our brave. They speak in every breath that blows above America. They say strong words of comfort to us while their breed, sons of their spirit, hold the Alamo. This is the blessed land we trust and love. Thermopylae, the messenger of defeat, the Alamo has none and had none. For we who fight for justice to all men, a world made free, count life well lost in this our glorious cause. To me, it's rather amazing. You can visualize the anxiousness and the horror, really, horror. But the mettle of the man, was the mettle of a man or a woman who was standing there, the mettle, the character of people surrender, would not surrender, even unto their death, they would not surrender. Because they had no out. If they surrendered, they lost their honor. If they surrendered, they may be butchered. If they stayed, they would probably die, but they would die fighting and making a statement and being honored and gaining immortality, if you will, because people die every day and are never remembered. They're found in their apartments for days, nobody's found them, nobody knows they exist. Tragic, tragic thing, but here people have people come to their aid, they stand firm and they stand bold and they stand proud and they stand for every last ounce of their fiber to fight and fight and fight an evil foe. And that evil foe is one who will not, under any circumstances, retreat. And heaven show no mercy. There have been armies and nations and people like that all through history. Mongolians, under the great Khans, Genghis Khan and his sons. The only method of, Mongolians, the Khan would come up to a castle or a city. They were all fortified cities, and he would say, surrender, and we will spare everyone. Fight us, and we will slay everyone. And those cities had no choice. I mean, they were outnumbered 3-1, or 5-1, or 10-1. So they gave up their cities. Obviously, the Mongols didn't even have to fight. It was just take it over. So I mean, when you do that, and you have that kind of PR working for you, you almost don't have to fight. The United States could have that kind of clout as an empire, actually, if all it did was just pretend, not to pretend, but to underwrite, if you will, the security of the world. We could regain our great fight, I think. And possibly what Obama spoke about today in his speech maybe that was what it was about. Let us underwrite, but not take full boat. We will ally with everybody. We have to make sure that everybody lies with us, with each other. Makes a lot more sense. But anyway, patriotism is what it is. The next thing I want to read is, believe it or not, it's not really that long, about 4 or 5 pages, and it's called The Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution of the United States are known as the American Bill of Rights. These 10 amendments were adopted by the first Congress of the United States in 1789. Later amendments came so slowly, one by one, that it was 142 years before another 10 had been adopted and ratified. But the first 10 came at once in response to the will of the whole people. For the people were determined that if they were to begin life under a new constitution, it must at the very outset guarantee them their rights. Of course, the people did not think of these as new rights. They were the old rights, as old as English liberty, under which the Americans had lived while they were still colonies of the British Empire. Our people had taken up arms to defend those rights, which they thought were threatened by the imperial government. Then came the proposed Constitution of the United States. As proposed, it seemed to many Americans to pay too much attention to the powers of the government, and too little to the rights of the people. Well, Americans who have rebelled against one government in defense of their ancient rights had no intention of giving up those rights until the new government, even if they had set it up themselves. So the American people demanded that the Bill of Rights be incorporated in the Constitution. Those people determined the fierce desire for freedom of worship that had brought Pilgrims and Puritans to New England, and Quakers to Pennsylvania, and Catholics to Maryland, the triumph fight for a free press in the colony of New York, the freedoms of speech and assembly and petition which the Americans had won by long struggle and had determined to hold on to, and the Bill of Rights put those memories into law. And I got to tell you, I often think of this because I've studied American history quite a bit, and that was my major in college. But I thought that of all these stories that one might possibly consider during that period of time was a group of men trying to figure out how the hell to create a country. And there were arguments on all sides and this and that, and how they were able to do it in such a short span of time is just a miracle. And as George Washington stated in his first inauguration speech, he said that it was the hand of Providence that put this country together, and it's the hand of Providence that will keep it together, and we must not screw it up. And that's what's happened. We've screwed it up. We've created such a perfect country, actually, in so many ways, ideologically, but it's been screwed up by greed and corruption and contempt and wickedness and evil have all laid layer upon layer upon layer of mud around the perfect egg, if you will, the perfect country, the perfect people. And we fight the freedom that we are allowed as and still are allowed as Americans is a wonderful thing, because I have a chance to talk like this on public airwaves. I have a chance to write what I feel on my website, LASteelShow.org, and on my radio show, my FM show, and on my television shows. And now in this new book that I've just written called Naked at the Mic, Survival of the Liberal in a Time of Peril. And I'm still waiting for a release date. Looks like it may be right around Christmas time or a little later. Hopefully it's still in the Christmas season to help me with some book sales here. But I'll be announcing that on these shows. And I'll be announcing it in the next couple of weeks as soon as I'm certain of a release date. And there'll also be an e-book, an electronic book, which will be a digital book that will be on, you can download. And I believe the cost of that will be about $6. But the soft copy, they haven't priced it yet. So I'll inform you as soon as that comes out, so people can at least refer to it. Let's see. What I wanted to say was in the Bill of Rights, they're so amazing. Just amazing. And let me get back to it. Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting any establishment of a religion or Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. First step of a despotic government is to disarm the people. The Americans of 1789 did not intend to be disarmed, and family by family, settled by settlement, they had defended themselves against the Indians. Many of them got their food or part of it by hunting. Many of the battles of the Revolution have been fought by men with their own muskets or rifles in their hands. So now, Article 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the right to bear arms. And before the Revolution, Americans had been forced, whether they liked it or not, to further quarters in their own houses, to furnish quarters in their own houses for soldiers who had come to suppress them. There was to be no more of that. Article 3, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Nor should the new government have any more right than the old to arrest the people or to invade their houses except for lawful cause and a lawful way. No secret police for the Americans. My, how times have changed. In violation of, do you see, as I read this, what fascinated me is how many violations there have been against our freedoms, our constitutional freedoms. And why are those people out there, some of the Tea Partiers, I have to say, some I don't know if they know what they're doing, but others, yeah, you know, I think they do. It's no different than a liberal gathering where you wonder if people know what they're doing or some other people do or whatever the situation is. There's a reality there. And when you offer, when your government, when your foundation, when your ancestors offer you a gift of freedoms, a package of freedoms that unleash, that unopen the doors that open the doors to ascension of physical suffering, no other country in the world has ever acquired the wealth that this country has had, nor has any country ever amassed such debt. No country in history has ever owed more than this country owes right now. It's insane. You know, you think you owe $50 or $60 trillion. It's bizarre. You know, it's like how much money that is. It's just, yeah. When you get to $100 trillion, it goes to a quadrillion. And I mean, that's freaking amazing. The mathematics is exponentially. But that's where we're at. And the funny thing is the only guys that know this are these guys, these crazy guys in the Fed who are driving around, you know, with like I said, Bernanke's helicopter theory of throwing money out to, you know, just throwing money at people, flying over people and dumping money out on them. That's basically what's been happening. And of course, it creates super hyperinflation and all kinds of problems that we're seeing now with our economy. So, if you look at where we're at as a country and where we should be, all right, based on the Bill of Rights, if you just go back to your stand on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and say, look, this is what it says. Then this, I mean, people do that with the Bible, and they say, this is what it says. And they feel they're right. So the Bill of Rights is just as sacred to the American people as the Bible, you know? And I think it's crazy in a way, because I don't know if there's another country in the world that has that same kind of crazy patriotism that we do. I'm fall for it, too. I mean, I fall for it all the time. you know, it's a good country, good people, great people, great country, and proud to be a member of it. But at the same time, in order to be a good citizen, in order to be a member of your society, a patriot, then you're patriotic to the principles that the country is founded upon. And those principles I'm reading tonight, which is called the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And we become so complacent sometimes in the security provided to us by our country. We're not aware of what cost our comfort is to other cost, or I should say, what discomfort our comfort is causing other people. And meaning, like if we are eating 3,500 calories a day, and other people are eating 300 calories a day, in some cases 3 calories a day, how is that just? I don't know how it evens out. But if because I'm eating, if I ate 2,000 calories a day, I would be thinner. I would be probably healthier. And I would be giving up 1,500 calories of food to someone else. What can I say? I mean, there's only that, you know, wealth is not unlimited, and neither is, I mean, monetary wealth. In fact, there's only $4 trillion in actual existence of currency. And this country alone owes $53 trillion, not just national, but combined debt, national and government and national debt of every American. So there's not enough money there to buy it. Okay, in other words, there's not enough collateral. All the money we can't afford, it's too big to fail. That we can't afford to fail, because if we fail as a nation economically, then and spiritually, then we will be devoured by other nations. But more so, we may not be devoured by them, but the entire world will implode, because the world looks to the United States for freedom. But we so many times let them down. And I don't know why. Our leaders are just that, and they're not infallible. But unfortunately, too many times they're dead wrong. And if they followed the rules of cosmos, the principles of the cosmos, meaning what you put out, you get back. Okay, what you put there, you get back. If you're going to put violence and corruption and whatever at a country and destroy it and its infrastructure and, you know, and its culture and its people, then expect to get back hatred. Expect to get back all of the worst that you could possibly imagine that people would desire against you. And you'll receive that too as a country, as an individual, or as an ideal. And you know, we are much higher beings than we are given credit for. We are mystical creatures. We are not fools. You know, we're not primal. We are intellectual beings who are connected to a one God, who are connected to a creator. Something created us that is far, far, far greater than can recreate, but not ourselves. We must have a partner to create. We must have, you know, an outside seed, in other words, or an outside body, carriage, vehicle, vessel for us to procreate. And so that's our limitation, that we cannot create without an outside influence, whereas Balaam created, our Creator created us from not the outside, but from the inside out. And he continues to create us that way, because as we developed as primal beings, we evolved and evolved and developed and enlightened over hundreds of thousands and possibly millions of years, right, into the beings that we are now, so that we're ready for another fourth dimensional rise. We're going to emerge. We're going to merge with the fourth dimension. And now there's no question about that. As we, you know, we've already come from a single cell amoeba, you know, to a trillion cell monolith, you know, just what we are. So, and we got so much more to go, so much further the way to think, to feel, find, you know. And I'm a great history buff. I'm a great history reader. Because there's truth in history. There's also falsehood in history, but primarily over time, history, like the oceans, find their levels, and we have a tendency to, you know, there's enough information out there by people determined to speak truth or falsehood. And either way, they get ciphered, sift through for what they are. And knowing what it takes to write and knowing what it takes to create a book of any value to the countless numbers of books that are published every year, the chances of having your book read is not great. I mean, it takes a lot of stamina and a lot of courage and a lot of boldness and a lot of whatever that many authors don't have to succeed, because it's a very, very difficult field. Because once you put your book out there, then you face the rejection of nobody buying your book because they don't like it or they don't, you know. But an author has to do that. It's like me having to give this program tonight. I wanted to give this program just like I wanted to give the book. They don't ask you for anything to listen other than your time. And even that is up to you. But we don't do this for any other reason than filtering the truth from the shaft, the wheat from the shaft. Filtering that. That's what we try to do. That's what I try to do. And it may come out crude, and it may come out odd, and it may come out whatever, but there is always going to be a primal thread of truth in what I say, because I mean a primal message, a primal one. I mean small or I mean primal. The message will come through that I'm saying what I'm saying. So this is the way that you have to cipher through you know, the good and the bad out there, and the knowledge and the misknowledge you know, that's around. And once you've done that, then you can grab hold of these special, what the meaning of these principles signify, and why they were stated, and how they were able to maintain the integrity of the United States for almost 300 years. So we... you know, we have to consider a very, very strange hand of providence that guides us all. And from that, I think if you work with that, I think we can go on and better understand the strength behind the Articles 3 through Articles 10, the Bill of Rights. Article 4. The right of the people to be insecure, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon a probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So, in other words, if you have a warrant, you have to go in and you have to say, I'm here to seize your house, okay, and everything in it. Fine. But if he comes in and they say, I'm here to seize your chair, right, or I'm here to seize you, well, they you can seize you, but if they're going to take anything out of your house for evidence or your computer or anything else, they have to have written in the warrant that they are taking these things and also what you're wanted for. So if you ever have anybody breaking in your door, just know that there's a Article 4 of the Bill of Rights. Life, liberty, and property were still to be secure against unjust acts, deliberate or ignorant, of government or courts. Accused men must continue to have bill of rights until they were found guilty. Article 5. No person. When they say article, this is amendment, Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service or in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. So that's double jeopardy. And nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, again the Fifth Amendment right, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So all of these issues are part of the Fifth Amendment. So if you hear the Fifth Amendment, say, what are they talking about? That's right of eminent domain, where they have to, they can take over your property, but the government can take your property, but they have to compensate for you. Double jeopardy. You can't be tried twice for the same crime. Nor shall be compelled in any case to deliver, and you can't testify against yourself. If you want to give up that right, but you have that right under the Constitution. In any court of law, that says you don't have to testify against yourself. The ancient right of trial by jury, either in criminal or civil cases, must be maintained, for without this right, there would be no rights at all. And Article 6 and 7 guarantee the right of trial by jury in detail. Article 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and districts wherein this crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and causes of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witness in his favor, and to have assistance of counsel for his defense. Article 7. The suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of the trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. anything, any lawsuit over $20, we have the right to settle by jury. Right? So don't think you don't. Then comes an amendment. Then comes an amendment, or rather an addition to the Constitution, which is in almost exactly the words used in the English Declaration of Rights of 1689 and of the Virginia Declaration of Rights of 1776. There were laws to protect the government against violence on the part of the people. Let there be a law to protect the people against violence on the part of the government. Article 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. That's Chapter 8. And they already put bail up to $1 million or more, or excessive fines imposed and cruel and unusual punishments. They still do that. They violate this every day in the court system. And finally, two amendments, Article 9 and 10, to protect the people and their states against future encroachments by the new federal government. The American people were not going to surrender rights without knowing what rights they were surrendering and why they were surrendering them. Article 9, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Or, in other words, whatever rights they give you here, explain, that does not deny or disparage other rights retained by the people. So, in other words, any other right that's not in here that you ascertain is yours. And Article 10, the power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. In other words, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, in other words, by the government of the United States, is nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively. So anything that the government deems is not their purview or not their area to govern is taken up by the states. We have lived under the American Bill of Rights for more than a century and a half, and this was back in a century ago, and back of every word lie the heat and tumult of many years of conflict. Many men falsely accused and punished, and many men put to death before these rights could be worn and passed on to subsequent generations, even to us and our children. We have these rights so long that we sometimes take them in a matter of course. When we do this, we are like the people who live safe halfway, but are safe behind a sea wall or levee, which their ancestors have built, and who themselves assume that sea wall or levee will shut out the dangerous water forever. But the ocean of the river is still there, still dangerous, and its descendants must either keep up the barrier their forefathers raised, or else sooner or later have to do all that hard and bitter work again. And that's the Bill of Rights. And, of course, edited by Carl Van Doren and Carl Kermer. And I found it to be fascinating, and I was very... Very pleased to be able to read this. I don't know if I'll have time to read this other one in about 10 minutes. The last essay tonight I wanted to read, or the American scripture, I should say, is Freedom of the Press. There is one American freedom in particular, which is in our very bones. It is the freedom of speaking and printing. When a man asks, "This is a free country, isn't it?" we know he means to speak. his mind, and we give him a chance, and then answer him. Think how we should have felt if we had fought in the dark during the recent wars, a war with no radio and press to bring us all the news that it was safe to make known. And true news is never so bad as no news would be. And fear and worry rise like a black cloud over ignorance. The truth makes us free. One of the rights Americans have guarded most zealously through the years is that of telling people what we think in print. Let your imagination take you back through the years to a little hot printing house in the town of Boston in June of the year 1722. A boy of 17 is trying to get out a newspaper. The title on the top of the sheets read The New England Courant. His older brother, owner of the paper, has been put in jail for printing criticism of governmental authorities. The boy knows that he himself may go to prison for the words he is printing, yet he does not hesitate. And without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. The words were not his own, but a quotation from the London Journal did not lessen the force of the argument of the boy printer, Benjamin Franklin. But an obstinate government across the sea continued to suppress the printing of critical comment in the American colonies. Arrogant governors influenced the King of England, George II, to prohibit freedom of the press in the great province of New York. For as much as great inconvenience may arise by the liberty of printing within our province of New York, you are to provide that no person keep any press, nor that any book, pamphlet, or other matter whatsoever be printed without your especial leave and license be first obtained. So nobody could have a printing press unless it was agreed to by the governor. Nevertheless, enemies of Governor Cosby's dictator-like rule in old New York started a newspaper, the Weekly Journal, and chose as editor John Peter Zenger, immigrant from the banks of the Rhine. Zenger set about printing strong criticism of this governor and was arrested and thrown into jail. Then Governor Cosby really went to work to assure that the prisoner's conviction on charges of libel. He had the two lawyers who dared to represent Zenger disbarred for challenging jurisdiction of the court, and he kept Zenger in jail for 9 months. But the dauntless printer kept on editing the Weekly Journal, and each day his wife came to the prison, and John Zenger told her through a hole in the door of his cell what he wanted published for the next issue. Now this guy got guts. I mean, this guy had guts, all right, and determination, man. And it is the great design of this paper to maintain and explain the glorious principles of liberty and to expose the art of those who would darken or destroy them. That's what Peter Zenger said. And John Peter Zenger, Z-E-N-G-E-R, was tried in midsummer in the old city hall. It stood on Wall Street where the sub-treasury building now stands. And the Attorney General, a favorite of the governor's little court, denounced the editor bitterly, and the governor's judge nodded his head in agreement. The cause of freedom of the press seemed hopelessly lost when the time came for the defense to present its case. Then the courtroom audience gasped. An old man had risen. He was Andrew Hamilton, the finest lawyer in all the colonies, and although his body was weak and neat with years, he had come all the way from Philadelphia to speak for the rights of John Peter Zenger and the rights of all men. And he says, "It is a privilege. I will go farther. It is a right which all free men claim, to complain when they are hurt. They have a right publicly to remonstrate against abuses of power, to put their neighbors upon their guard against crafts or open violence of men in authority, and to assert with courage the sense that they have of the blessings of liberty, and the resolutions of all hazards to preserve it. Men who injure and oppress the people under their admiration, provoke them to cry out and complain, and then make that very complaint the foundation for new oppressions. And the question before the court and you, gentlemen of the jury, is not a small and private concern. It is not the cause of a poor printer nor of New York alone, which we are trying. No, it is the best cause. It is the cause of liberty. When the old man stopped speaking, there was a stillness in the hot courtroom. Slowly the jury filled out, and the crowd, knowingly every one of them, for New York was a little city. Slowly the jury filed out, and the crowd, knowing every one of them, for New York was a little city then, and felt that they were trustworthy men who would give an honest verdict. There was a long wait, and the sultry August day moved slowly towards its close. Then there was a jury march back again. The foreman spoke out for all people everywhere who love freedom and hate tyranny. We find the defendant, John Peter Zenger, not guilty. And there was no silence after the speech. The crowd yell shook the courtroom, while the enraged judge fumed and sputtered, and waiting people outside in Wall Street took up the exulting cry. It spread over the city like a blowing flame, the flame of freedom, and New York rejoiced that it had won a round in the everlasting conflict men must wage to keep their civil rights. Andrew Hamilton, being a wise man, knew that there would be other battles like this in New York and Boston and in his own city of Philadelphia, but he had fought a good fight and he had won it. But there was one great and glorious fact that he could not know. That was that through battles such as his own and those that had gone before in his land, which he loved, a new nation would be born, and a nation whose very foundations would rest on human rights. And Benjamin Franklin and Andrew Hamilton had fought for the same thing, and it was because they kept the love of freedom alive here in this country that eventually that part of our Constitution known as the Bill of Rights was born. And old Andrew Hamilton did not know it, but his courageous fight helped make it possible that more than half a century later, more than a century later, the very first concession of our Congress wrote into Constitution one of the most sacred scriptures. Hear the voice of James Madison reading to that Congress the words that have become our precious heritage. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridgment of the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And that is freedom of the press, as edited by Carl Van Doren and Carl Kramer, and published in 1946, The American Scriptures. And we just got about a minute, so I want to thank so much for listening tonight. I hope you enjoyed that. I have a little something different for you. And join us next week when we start it all over again. Friday night, this Friday, George won't be with us. We won't have a show. But next week, he will. And so join us then, and have a pleasant evening. Good night.